Welcome to La Liga Weekly. The transfer market is really heating up in La Liga. What with Darwin Machis moving to Valladolid for an undisclosed fee and Mallorca signing another defender, like the new one. Memphis Depay cost Atleti €3 million. Why don't the Spanish clubs throw money around for our perverse entertainment like they do in the Premier League? Just over £2.5 million for a 28-year-old with 43 international goals for the Netherlands. Now, Arsenal are apparently keen on Valladolid's Ivan Fresneda. I want to get La Liga expert Terry Gibson's opinion on the Madrid-born fullback. But you know what? Shockingly, he hasn't even watched him play 10 league games yet. How are you supposed to judge whether a guy's worth €15 million when you've barely heard of him? Dortmund are interested as well, but Valladolid should probably wait around and see if Chelsea steam in and offer €60 million. There is a different economic reality between the Premier League and everywhere else, but don't wreck your own league because of that. Having said that, do try scoring a goal or two, lads. 14 goals in 9 games so far in this round. The Bundesliga is back. They scored 41 in 9 games. Florentino Perez should move to Germany if he's worried about everyone giving up on football and playing Call of Duty instead. Valladolid haven't scored in 5 matches. Their XG over that period in La Liga is 2.6. Means that they haven't created a decent chance. Still, what a win. The top scorers this week were Atletico Madrid. It's amazing what you can achieve when you play a striker. Real Sociedad have won 9 in a row in all competitions. Sevilla won. But I have come to the conclusion that we're going to have to call security when the time comes to sack Sampaoli.
Oh, that's bonkers. I can't wait to get stuck into that game.
Yes.
And some of the others, but as you said, are really struggling. Fresneda's an interesting one. I've been asked by clubs before the World Cup, and he only played 5 games then, I think, 4 or 5 games. And clubs were saying, oh, we've got no chance of getting him. And when I've spoken to clubs over the years, I've talked about players that have played 2 or 3 seasons and they've never heard of them. Mm. Yet for some reason, this young boy at Valladolid, who is good, he's solid, he's made a really good start to his career. But for some reason, this 18-year-old at Valladolid has got traction in terms of an agent doing some good work. Speculation linking him to big clubs all over Europe, and it appears that despite him having an €8 million buyout clause, he's going to go for €15 million. So it's I understand why a club would do it. He's made a good start. It's relatively cheap for a Premier League club, €8 million. So just go and do it. I don't know why it's being prolonged. Yeah. And he's going to go by.
So I got the €15 million fee because that's what everyone is reporting. I don't have any independent sources on this. Fabrizio Romano, who is, you know, is a very good source, isn't he? He obviously has contracts with agents, doesn't he? Because he gets stories, doesn't he?
Yeah.
And so, but everyone's saying 15, but you think there's a buyout clause?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I've read that in the Spanish press that the buyout clause was €8 million. And you've got to remember, he's probably on hundreds of euros a week.
Yeah,
he's just starting his career. Obviously, hasn't signed a new contract since he's been playing first team football. So it should be a straightforward deal for anybody to do. So, but I can't imagine his buyout clause is €15 million for an 18-year-old that's just starting his career. That's only probably his first professional contract. €8 million is a big buyout clause for someone of that type in terms of you're 18, you're just signing your first professional contract. €8 million is high, so they must have had high hopes for him. So just pay it. I don't know why this is... I really don't know why it's dragging on, but some of these transfers, they miss a whole month of a player they eventually sign.
Yeah.
When they could have done a deal at the beginning of the transfer window and actually have him for 3, 4, 5 matches before the transfer window closes. Perhaps a club are not in desperate need to play an 18-year-old in their first team, so they're trying to negotiate the best deal they can. But at the risk of losing a player, if you actually believe he's that good, the courage to go and pay the buyout clause and buy him. Interestingly, he didn't play at the weekend, so he was left out. So I think speculation is true that he's going somewhere. And I think he's a really promising young right back that's looks more mature than an 18-year-old. But he's been good. He's been okay. A world beater, I don't know. Mm. But at 18, it's worth a... an investment from a club that's got that money laying around down the back of a sofa.
Well, you wonder where they've watched him, because he played, I think, 1 game in the second division last season. He started 7 games this season. So how could you have done any detailed work on the guy? Other than thinking, oh, he looks all right. It's just
exactly, and but I guess the price is an attraction.
Yeah.
But it is baffling. As I said to you, I've spoke to clubs about players that have been playing regularly for 3 or 4 years and they've never heard of them. But somehow this player has got traction. His agent has done some good work. Speculation leaked in the press. Then everybody goes, oh, we should know about this player. Until someone buys him. But he's good. He is good. But the evidence isn't enough to say one way or the other. If you're asking me honestly, I think he's good. I think he's an 18-year-old good right back. That if you ask me, maybe at the end of the season, if he plays another 15, 20 games, we can have a better judgment on him. But at the moment, he looks good. Probably worth the $8 million gamble from a Premier League club. 15, I don't know whether that's the charity. We see, was it Chelsea last week gave an extra $20 million for soldiers in Ukraine or something than they for their player, and it's,
well, they, who knows if I mean that might be the case, but they also Chelsea are paying over the buyout clause, aren't they, to get so they can stage the payments, because if you pay the buyout clause, obviously if it's $8 million in this case, you've got to pay the $8 million, haven't you, plus the taxes and everything, and it's all got to go straight to a third party, isn't it, and it's done, and then the club gets all of the money, whereas if you bid, you can spread your payments out over a period of years as Chelsea. And that's why Mudryk's got that crazy long contract.
A year deal. Their players are.
But it's like they think they've cracked the code on that. They really haven't. Because all you're doing is kicking your FFP problems down the line, isn't it? Because you've now got... So if Mudryk's a brilliant success, fine. But if he struggles on that kind of money, you're still paying his transfer fee in 5, 6, 7 years from now. And so therefore it's very hard to replace him, because also they're bound to be paying him a massive amount of wages that the next level of club down can't afford to pay for him. So it's a massive sort of almost, you know, Barcelona Bartomeu kind of tying yourself up in knots for the future, because you're so convinced in your own rightness about making decisions now. But Mudryk played his 30th game at the weekend. His 30th league game.
Yeah, I know we're a La Liga podcast, of course, but there's so many of these. I mean, look, Chelsea bought Lukaku, and a year later for $100 million. A year later, they loan him away, and again a fraction of his wages paid. Mm. He's probably got another 3 or 4 years on his deal left. So he'll either go back to Chelsea, and they pay him what they have to pay him. Or he'll keep appearing on loan at different clubs until his contract runs out and he goes on a free transfer. We could spend ages, and we have spent quite a lot of time. And I'll sum it up. It's the transfer fees, you're making light of the fact there isn't a lot of movement, and Memphis Depay, it's an unbelievable signing, that is.
Yeah.
I know he only had months left on his contract, so that was the biggest reason why. But as you said, he's got loads of international goals, loads of experience. He can play. What level he is at, I think it's an interesting. I'm actually interested in seeing how he does at Atletico Madrid. I think he can thrive there, to be honest, and probably hasn't got the playing time he should have done this season. He's been ignored at Barcelona because obviously they wanted to move him on. So I think it's a really good deal. But I'll go back to what I've always said, and I've watched a lot of Premier League stuff lately There's still not a lot. There's a lot of not very good players that play regularly in the Premier League, but they cost a lot of money. So my argument is it's cheaper to be not very good in the Liga than it is cheaper than it is to be not very good in the Premier League. So you know we at the drop of a hat we talk about someone who's he went for $15 million.
Would you expect $15 million, didn't it?
Would you expect? And then in Spain you're seeing a similar club. Player of similar quality going for 2, 3, 4 million or free transfers out of contract and stuff like that. So it's a huge difference. It's massive.
Barca could have got more money for Depay selling him elsewhere. Presumably Xavi said he wanted to go, fair enough.
Yeah.
They didn't pay a transfer fee for him. So anything is sort of bankable as a profit. But when Danny Ings has gone for 15 million, Memphis Depay going for £2.5 million. Why they could have got a bigger price selling him elsewhere?
Was Danny Ings's contract up in the summer though? That's the big difference.
Yeah, I don't know.
I haven't seen. I haven't read that he was out of contract in
But a
four
club would
or five
pay
months'
you,
time.
you know, given that Chelsea have paid João Félix, the loan fee is 9 million.
Yeah, it's three times the amount that Memphis Depay's cost to buy.
Yeah, yeah. So surely someone would have, surely someone would pay more than that. I don't understand that bit. I mean, I know they've done a deal over Griezmann.
The player has the power then, doesn't he? The player has the power in Memphis's position. He can wait, and it's not long to wait.
Yeah,
but leave for free to go to Atletico Madrid.
I guess
so. It kind of is better than something. It's better than nothing. I don't think anyone would have paid 10, 15 million for him. I think because of his contract, they'll wait a few months. Everyone would be.
But I don't know
Barcelona
how hard they
the
work.
Pressure on them.
Yeah, that's what I'm getting. I don't know how hard Barcelona worked at it. If did they try and get 6, 7, 8 million for him from a club that needs a striker? Everyone needs a striker. You know, loads of clubs. Everyone in trouble needs a striker. He's a good striker. I take your point. He's not one of the world's best, but he's a good striker. So surely someone would have paid a bit more. But there we are. Maybe
I think we're programmed into the Premier League mentality, though, aren't we? 6 or 7, 8 million is still a lot of money to most of the other clubs in Spain. It's a lot of money to some of the club, most a lot of clubs in Germany that would want Memphis, Italy, France. It's that they're not in the business of
not spending crazy
spending
money.
7 or 8 million on a player. If we wait a few months and give him an attractive offer, we might get him for free. So the world is different outside of the Premier League.
It makes such a difference as to whether you sell someone to the Premier League or not. Isaac being a case in point with 60 million, 60 million euros. He's like, okay, he's all right. Scored a goal recently, didn't he? You know, but from about a yard out. and it just, you know, the idea that you'd go if he'd moved within La Liga for, I don't know, what would he move for? 10, well, 15 million? I don't know.
Possibly, you're looking at Barcelona and Real Madrid. If they don't want Isak, then I don't see him going anywhere else in La Liga.
No.
I don't see anyone being able to have the money to get anywhere near what Real Sociedad would accept to sell him. That's why Real Sociedad have kept all majority of their best players, is because unless Barcelona and Real Madrid want them, they're pretty safe in Spanish football at Real Sociedad. Yeah. Because unless, you know, someone from, Germany or the Premier League, come in and take them away. That's why they're able to keep these good young players, because a good young player at Real Sociedad isn't going to leave and go to Celta Vigo for 15 million. Or, you know, or Valladolid or even Valencia. There isn't that market. So that's why, unless it's a Premier League club, come along, someone like Real Sociedad can keep their best young players. And because no one's come in and bought any of them, aren't they, apart from Isak.
Yeah,
I mean, Real Madrid, Yarramendi was the last one prior to that, but they managed to keep their players. So it's good for La Liga and great for clubs like Real Sociedad, who invested that money well. And one of their cheaper replacements, Sorloth, is leading the line extremely well for them. Takekuba, they spent their money on. Umar Sadiq, who's been injured, is a good player as well. So their prize Mendes came in at 13 million. So they're brilliantly run.
Should we do their game while we're on, shall we? So they won 2-0 at Rayo, Sorloth and Barrenechea, and it's a ninth straight win. I mean, they've got an interesting week coming up. We've got Barca in the cup, and then Real Madrid in La Liga. But they're still sort of under the radar, aren't they, Real Sociedad? Because there are no big fees being paid out, because it's something unspectacular about it, but also something quite wholesome about Real Sociedad's
brilliant
success, isn't it?
Yeah, it is from the club, from the top to the bottom. And the top, I mean, I don't know too much about the people that run the club, other than the fact you look from the outside, you think they're doing a fantastic job. And then you look at Emilio Aguasil, the coach. The job he's done is phenomenal. And the background, you know, he played for the club, he coached the different age groups at the club. He was a reluctant manager at first, and then had a spell as caretaker, and then eventually came to accept that was his position as manager. And it's incredible. And at the weekend, I mean, they've been playing so well, and they won the Basque Derby the week before. There's no Mikel Merino, no Zubimendi, and Kubo was rested. Barrenechea is another young player who's, I think he's the real deal. has had some injury problems over the last couple of years. He comes in and scores. Soloff gets another goal. And names come in and you think, oh, cool, I don't know much about him. I don't know anything about him. He looks good. He looks good. He looks good. It's just ridiculous how they've got this conveyor belt of young, talented footballers. The work that must have gone into that club in the last decade to set up, not to set up, because it's always been there. It's traditional. It's quite historic how many successful players they've had come through their system. But I'm guessing it's never been this prolific in terms of young players that come in and you think, well, that's another good, really good young player. There's another really good young player. It's phenomenal. And they play a lovely style of football. They've spent well in the transfer market. They're interesting. People like David Silva coming in was an interesting signing, and he's been brilliant for the club. Yara Mendy coming back was a decent signing, although he's been on periphery of playing in the first team on a regular basis, but he's a good personality, steeped in the tradition of La Real to be around the club. Soloff coming in as an emergency signing has worked really well. From Taki Kubo was ridiculously cheap for a player of his quality as well. So it's just a super football club. As you said, 9 straight wins. I think it's 5 straight in the La Liga. And are they under the radar? I think there's still an air of mystery about them, to be honest. Because we have Barcelona, Real Madrid and Atletico Madrid. And squeezed in between is Real Sociedad. And these are really good. These are really good to watch.
Yeah.
They play lovely football. They play winning football. It's a fantastic story in regards to that club and La Liga.
I've seen a lot written about them. About Alguacil never linked to a job elsewhere. And, you know, just allowed to carry on producing players, signing the odd one here or there, getting, you know, Solot in on loan and stuff like that. And, you know, heading to the Champions
League. And people like Bryce Mendes has been a good signing. Mikel Merino has been a good signing. So the signings they make, I mean, Diego Rico, who came in on a free from Bournemouth, he's done well as well. So hardly any of their signings fail, and hardly any of their signings are then you forget about them. They make a signing and he never plays. And you know, it's even Martin Odegaard, who's playing brilliantly for Arsenal, he had, you know, fantastic spell. It was the right move for him at the right, to the right club, with the right coach, with the right group of players. So it's just a superbly run football club.
Right, Real Sociedad done.
So there weren't too much to say about the game, to be honest, because I mean, they raced into a 2-goal lead, controlled the game, were conserving themselves for the cup match in midweek. Hence the reason I think Kubo was rested, Merino and Zubimendi, I think one was injured, one was suspended. Rayo had a go in the second half, but just couldn't get back into the game. And there's an element now. Every time you watch Real Sociedad, we do all this talking about what I just spoke about. But actually, when you look at them, you think, actually, they're a cut above the rest, of a large proportion of that division now. They are real, genuine quality. It's not a surprise when they win, even away from home against Rayo, who are very good. So you're thinking, where can they get in terms of closing the gap to the two above them now? That's the next step. And they're not far away at all.
Let's talk about the two above them, shall we? Shall we Real Madrid first, shall we?
Yeah.
I mean, a really good win for them, wasn't it? Away to Athletic. Benzema with a fabulous strike. And then Toni Kroos, actually, lovely goal as well. That came right at the very end, didn't it? We had talked about them being a bit under par, hadn't we, since the World Cup, but that's significant to go and win comfortably at Athletic.
Yeah, I think the difficulties they've had since the World Cup have suddenly focused them, and then being 2-0 down against Villarreal at half-time in the Copa del Rey and coming back in and winning 3-2 shows that, we don't doubt they've got that winning mentality. It just needed them to be focused. It needed the better players to start performing again after the World Cup settled down. And that's what they're doing. They controlled this game. First 15 minutes, Athletic were bright, were lively. As you'd expect, they're playing Real Madrid at home. Crowd are right behind them. They wanted to cause an upset. And then from then on, Real Madrid had more possession, kept the ball, managed the game really well. As you said, a really sharp finish from Benzema, who looks as if he's getting back to his best as well now. And then Toni Kroos perhaps at the end. I think it was a really good performance. Defensively, it was much improved on what we've seen recently from Real Madrid. So I think they were quite happy for Athletic to have the ball. and Athletic just lack inspiration. And I, in this game, I think I'd like to talk more about Athletic Club than Real Madrid, because we're seeing Valverde's team morph into Marcelino's for our very eyes. Yeah, at the start of the season, we had this new, vibrant, attack-minded Athletic Club. And now I look at it and I think we've changed the midfield over, but all the players at Athletic Club in midfield look the same, apart from Sunset. But Sunset now plays where Munyain was playing at the start of the season. So at the start of the season, you had Danny Garcia and Sunset, Ian Sunset, as a midfielder in a two. Then you had Munyain, trying to think how what the lineup was. Iñaki was playing up front, wasn't he? Nico Williams, Munyain, who else would have been playing wide? So it's a four, Berenguer, 4-2-3-1. But with one more attacking player in there.
Yeah.
Now he's reverted back to dropping Munyain and playing Sunset as the number 10 and playing Iñaki and Nico wide. Guruzeta has been playing. He came off the bench last night. So it's kind of taken away that daring approach that we saw at the start of the season when Sunset was one of the midfield two. And I thought it really did suit them. And, you know, they were scoring. But I think Berenguer was playing, because when I do their games, I look and he's got three goals. They were scoring. Sunset had three. Iñaki had three. Nico had three. The goals were coming from all over that attacking lineup. And in the last month, six, seven, eight games, he's reverted back to two in midfield. And then, you know, Sunset playing as the number 10. And it just looks like it's a step back to me. So in that game, Real Madrid, I thought they were kind of toying with Athletic Club, the fact that we won't have the ball, put the ball in the box. We're defending better tonight. We're defending deeper. We're nice and compact. Come up with something special to break us down. And after time, when Athletic Club put the ball in the box, there's no one in there. There was a great example at the end. There was a corner. It went to the far post. It got put back in across the goal. I'm not sure which player it was. It bounced down. It went into the middle of the six-yard box when it was 1-0 with about 5 minutes to go. And there was four Real Madrid players and no red and white striped shirt in the six-yard box from a set piece, second ball. And you just thought that pretty much sums up what Athletic are lacking at the moment, that inspiration in front of goal. Great attitude, work hard. Lecoway messes up for the second goal when he chests the ball down and allows, he should have headed it back into the attack for Athletic Club, but he tried to chest it down only to go back to his goalkeeper, or back to a centre-back, got dispossessed. And before you know it, Kroos is wrapping the game up with a fine finish, but one I think a better goalkeeper would have saved, if I'm being honest. I mean, it looks great, it's right in the corner, but when you look at the goalkeeper's movement, he actually gets there, but it goes over his arms instead of getting contact on it. So it's a difficult little period for Athletic Club. And I hope Valverde gets back to being that daring coach that we saw in the first part of the season.
You were right. I just checked there. They scored four against Almeria, and it was that lineup. It was exactly as you remembered. That's the setup was.
And that was a big difference. It was a big jump from what we saw under Marcelino, where we're getting the same Athletic Club now.
Yeah.
Great character, great spirit, very well organised, very well coached. But Valverde brought something different to it. Even the fullbacks were being asked to push on more. But now we're seeing it looks like Marcelino's Athletic Club again.
Barcelona won by 1-0. Good old Barcelona. As I say, best defence in all five.
Do you know how many
leagues.
Goals they've conceded at home this season? One. And that was a penalty against Espanyol.
Yeah.
It's the only goal. And in this game last night, they could have conceded two or three.
Yeah.
So Stegen's been in great form this season. We talk about all the other stuff at Barcelona that goes on, and quite often we forget. You want a goalkeeper to play at the back, he's your man. And he's a fine goalkeeper as well. And he pulled off a couple of really good saves last night. Mayoral probably should have scored, but Ter Stegen denied him. It's not a lot to say about this game. But I mean, I was interested with Xavi's interview afterwards. He was very honest. Satisfied with the result, but far from satisfied with the performance. Lewandowski's a big miss. They're struggling through without him at the moment. And they've just done inspiring. And Frankie de Jong didn't start. That was make a bit of a difference in midfield. Their defence was reasonably solid, but Ter Stegen still has to make good saves. And it was one of these weird games where Hatafe had about five or six chances that were all offside, but they lead to the attack being finished. and you think, oh, it looked dodgy. So you're looking and thinking, did Barcelona look dodgy at the back? Oh, the flag's now gone up. And after Stegen's made a save, or someone's made a last-ditch block. And so you can't, it kind of sways it away. You're thinking that, oh, they keep getting in. Yeah, but they're offside.
I can't remember who the pundit was on that, but pundits in general need to take offside into account, and they often don't. They carry on analysing the defensive actions, and you think, well, the defense got it right. He was offside.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes if it's like a toe, you've got no. But it's sometimes when a guy's clearly offside, you think, well, they defended that well then. That's
exactly.
You know.
Yeah, it is something to take into account. And every goal that's scored now, I am waiting for a complaint, and then for VAR to forensically. It's become an instinct for me now. Every goal that's scored, is it going to be allowed? Is there something like? And I think it's an instinct for players that concede the goal. They just raise an arm now and hope there's something there. Mm. Appeal for something in the hope that VAR might find something. But you're right. Those offsides, some are 2 yards offside. Play continues. Defender rushes back, makes a tackle. Flag goes up. To Stegen is forced into a good save. Or the shot goes just over the bar. And we do tend to include that as a action in a game, which shouldn't be the case. And that was Getafe last night. They kept getting caught offside. They kept getting in. Kept getting caught offside, and you could easily put down, oh, defence looks dodgy. Getafe have had some really good chances, but they haven't. They've been illegitimate actions of play. So that game, not a lot to talk about. Barca were slow, poor, they looked tired, they looked jaded, didn't look particularly up for the game at all. And I think we've got this interesting thing with the cup. You know, we talked in the last few years how important the cup has been. And when you look at the cup draw and the matches that they've just played, the teams they put out, Barcelona were the only ones that put out a weakened team, really, and still won 5-0. But then Barcelona, Real Sociedad, Osasuna, Sevilla, Valencia, Athletic, Real Madrid, Atletico Madrid. They've kind of got an eye on those games this week. So that's why there's been rotations with the teams involved, still involved in Copa del Rey, who are taking that incredibly serious. And I think Barca's, this one, the home game against Getafe before they play Real Sociedad in the Copa del Rey, who also rested players on the Saturday, kind of that was the type of performance we got from Barcelona, where they had an eye on the midweek game against Real Sociedad.
Yes. Right, so what are we? Atletico. So we've been very critical of Atletico recently, haven't we? And have been quite hard to enjoy. But Griezmann, I thought, played particularly well. I mean, they blew Valladolid away, didn't they, with an early burst in the game, which is the sort of thing that you want them to do, isn't it? You know, attack, win the game, and then you can relax a bit and mess around a bit.
Yeah, and with the game against Real Madrid coming up in the Copa del Rey, I mean, that's a massive game. So they're damaged. They were 3-0 up in 30 minutes, and it was the Griezmann show. You know, the way he's playing is, the people are saying it's the best spell of his career, and it's astonishing how it's turned around from a struggle at the start of the season, struggle when he joined Atletico, and a struggle this season. He weren't getting the playing time. He weren't allowed to play. Went into the World Cup, not on the back of great form, had a great World Cup, and then comes back and was pulling all the strings in this game. Fantastic flick from Morata's goal, and Morata with a fantastic finish. It was an exuberant performance from Atletico Madrid. It was full of that attitude of, we're trying to put things right. We're sick of everyone having a pop at us, sick of everyone having a pop at the manager. And then Griezmann gets the second, Hermoso gets the third in 28 minutes against a team that can't score, can't win, are in real trouble. And then they took the foot off the gas. Normal circumstances, I'd say classic Atletico, classic Simeone, went 3-0 up and stopped attacking. But I think because of the game against Real Madrid coming up midweek in the Copa del Rey, I think they were entitled to in this game. The game was done.
That way round makes perfect sense.
They were
sense.
Brilliant. Yeah. Exactly. They were brilliant in that. In the whole of the first half, absolutely brilliant. They were quick, they were sharp, they were playing the ball forward, players with lots of players in the box, and look exactly what we hope Atletico are going to be on a regular basis, but they haven't been.
Right, we'll tick that one off the list. Where should we go next?
Sevilla. Sevilla, I'm stuck in the Sevilla. No,
so they won.
We're doing the top.
Yeah, they won, Tara. I don't know what you're complaining about. glory days. But Cadiz, it's such an important, it was a penalty, wasn't it, in the 87th minute. And it's just, I mean, it's a terrible bit of defending. He sort of misjudges a cross, doesn't he? And just, Is it instinctive?
Ocampos is behind him.
Yeah.
You see, even Alejo's running back towards his own goal. It's a long diagonal cross. It might go out for a goal kick, but he knows Ocampos is behind him. And the giveaway is really a wristband on, didn't he? A sweatband. Old-fashioned tennis playing wristband. And it is, I don't think it's the worst infringement in the world. It took loads of replays to actually notice that hit the hand. Ocampos, I think, was behind him and complained straight away and brought it to the ref's attention and VAR. A slight deflection, he picks up a yellow card, which puzzles me. He didn't mean to do it. He gets a yellow, and that's his second yellow, and he's sent off as well. So it's a harsh punishment all around. Rakitic kept his nerve. For the first time in the game, someone in that bloody stadium kept their nerve because it was so, it reeked of desperation. The crowd were brilliant. You know, there was talk of a protest and stuff like that, but they weren't. The stadium was full. It was a regional derby as well. Cadiz are hard to break down. I'll give you all of that. But the desperation from the dugout is just absolute bonkers. Sam Powley, he gets sent off eventually. He's just going berserk at every little thing that happens on that pitch. And then we had this sight now and scene of Monchi, the director of football, patrolling the bench, patrolling the touchline. And with no sort of real jurisdiction of, hang on, you're director of football, what are you doing on the bench? He was picking an argument with the ref. He was waiting for the ref at halftime, and there was nothing untoward from the officiating in this game. That actually Sevilla benefited from the end, from getting a penalty and winning the game. And Monchi's waiting for the referee to come off at halftime in a threatening manner. He was having, I think it was a confrontation with Alvaro Negredo on the bench of Cadiz, a former Sevilla player. They were having a bit of a set to it. It wasn't aggressive, but there was a discussion going on during the second half. And thinking, why is the director of football knocking around on the touchline? He should be doing everything he can to keep things under control because Sevilla have good players. They do have a good manager who's acting totally unreasonable at the moment. And the fact is, when Sam Powley got sent off, Sevilla calmed down and played their best football of the game because he weren't there. So you get this like character storming up and down the touchline, shouting at every single player in a very aggressive manner, shouting at the officials in a very aggressive manner. I'm kind of glad that I played when managers didn't have a technical area. And they just used to sit on the bench smoking cigars. And that's not metaphorically speaking. They did used to sit there smoking cigars on the bench. And look it up. There's loads of images of old managers sitting there, smoking a pipe, smoking, and just sitting there, you know. And just, I can't even recollect too many of them getting up and coming out on the bench and shouting at you. This micromanaging that we see from coaches now is, I'm not a fan, I have to be honest. I think that a lot of it is playing up to the media, it's playing up to the supporters. If I was playing, I would want a much more... And then we see Ancelotti last night and Valverde, and they're not going berserk and jumping up and down and screaming at officials and screaming at every single player that gets the ball. The players, trust me, the players don't hear them. You know, if you're playing right back on the opposite side of the pitch and every time you get the ball, the manager's shouting out where to pass it.
There's not time to react. So you can be aware that he's there. That's the thing, isn't it? So you can be aware that he's up, jumping up and down and his nomads and screaming and shouting. But there isn't time for... I get this in kids' football where you can hear them. There's not time to tell them how to pass because you've got to have done it before there's time for him to see it, shout it, you listen and then make a decision. That's too long. It's bang, play your pass, your decision.
And it's interesting to see what people think about it. Do supporters like it? Do they need that?
Yeah.
Manager has to, I played, and it's quite common for a manager to sit in the director's box in the first half to get a better view of the game and then come down at halftime and stay on the bench for the second half. And it kind of takes away from, as I say, micromanaging takes away from players having responsibility and making more decisions on their own instead of looking at a bench every 5 minutes. And then when I spoke last week about the five subs rule now, it means that manager can have even more influence on the game. And I think sometimes they over-exaggerate their own influence on a game of football, to be honest. And now they've got five chances to make a change. And they can stand on it in a technical area that's adjacent to the touchline and scream and shout and go berserk for 90 minutes. I think we overestimate how much influence they actually can have in a game. They certainly overestimate it. I don't like it, I have to be honest. Yeah. I want to see a manager who's calm, collected. I know you every now and then, every manager is going to disagree with a referee or have some sort of situation. But in general, I'd rather see a manager that looks like he knows what he's doing. Ancelotti is the
what's
example.
What's he ever won, Terry?
Yeah. He's the example of, you know, yeah. He might get the ump, as we saw with Rodri when he got substituted last week and didn't say anything, you know, didn't acknowledge Ancelotti, let him have it, that sort of thing. But that, even that was done. That wasn't him going berserk and kicking bottles and throwing stuff and, you know, and smashing up stuff. And it just irritates me. So watching the director of football and the manager of Sevilla, there was no, ended up with Dimitrovic giving instructions for the last 20 minutes from the bench, the sub goalkeeper in a calm manner, telling players where, I think he was getting involved in a formation. But everyone just needs to calm down at Sevilla. They won't go down. I guarantee you, they won't go down. It's not the season they wanted. They're not playing well. Every player looked on Saturday evening as if they were running around with a fridge on their back. They were slow. The play was slow. Lamela was the only spark. Ocampos came on. Crowd went berserk. So that gave everyone a lift. They were far better than Cadiz. Got them to score goals still. And if it wasn't for a penalty, this probably would have been another draw and a 0-0. But I promise you, Sevilla won't go down. It's not going to be the season they wanted. They're not going to finish in Europe. But they won't go down. But Sampaoli, I think, is making that situation a whole lot worse. So I really wanted to get stuck into that.
Right, job done.
That game on the Saturday night. Just calm down, everyone at Sevilla. And that includes the director of football. Suited and booted and running up and down the pitch like a villain. Ridiculous.
Villarreal beat Girona by a goal to nil. If you left to beat the traffic, you missed an awful lot of action, didn't you? Because they had two penalties in stoppage time, the second of which they won the game with, which I think was 100 minutes in. So yeah, don't leave early.
Yeah, I think I kind of have some sympathy for Michel, the Girona manager. Villarreal had another penalty given by the referee, which VAR overruled.
Yeah.
And then they get two penalties and added on time. The first one, never a penalty. Oriol Romeo tries to clear the ball. I think it's Pau Torres, who might have been contact, I don't know, but he certainly made enough of it to draw the attention to everyone. And the last one was a penalty. I think it was Santi Bueno, the centre-back, has got Pau Torres' shirt from a set piece. It was quite interesting. It's well spotted, actually, because he's got the VRL shirt on and underneath a bright yellow undershirt as well. And Bueno pulls the shirt of Pau Torres practically over his head, defending the corner before the corner comes, as the corner's coming in. But if you don't look closely, because of the yellow undershirt, it still looks like pulled the shirt over his head. So when you see the replays, yeah, it's going to be a penalty. You can't literally rip someone's head off, rip someone's shirt over their head when you're defending a corner. And of course, Gerard Moreno missed one. Danny Parejo scored these. I think it was the 101st minute in the end. But Villarreal were good. They should have done, but you know, won by more goals. Gazzaniga played really well in goal. It's an excellent story. Joanne had their chances, and Pepe Reina, which we haven't barely mentioned. There must have been a period of this season when Geronimo really was moved on, wasn't playing. Pepe Reina comes in. I think they've got a 40-year-old goalkeeper and a 20-year-old goalkeeper. That's the options for Kike Setien. And Pepe Reina looks a bit bigger than he used to. Okay. But he's doing remarkably well. And it's, you know, he still looks a pretty secure goal. I think we both agreed there was an issue with the goalkeeping position of ERL. I didn't expect the solution to be Pepe Reina, but he's doing well at the moment. And they're back in. They've got. I think we're seeing now the top of the table.
Yeah.
Develop into genuinely who's going to be involved in the battle for the not just European places, but in particularly the top four.
Yeah, we should read it out, shouldn't we? Let's have a look.
Villarreal, definitely in the mix for that now. Right. Setién's done a good job in recent weeks.
Yeah.
The World Cup was a benefit to him, I think. He was under pressure going into it, wasn't he? He lost his first few games. There was talk about if they didn't win this game, he was going to get the sack after about five or six games. They won that, and then they had the break for the World Cup. Since their comeback, they've been in really good form, and I think you look at the points there. We can take it further down. I don't think Athletic Club will be challenging for the top four, definitely for a European spot. Likewise, Rayo and Osasuna, but Betis have been in poor run of form lately. And suddenly you're looking at it and you think, well, Real Sociedad, they're playing superbly well, and a healthy gap between them and Atletico and Villarreal. So I think probably the top five, maybe still go with Betis. Time to turn things around. Am I being disrespectful saying Osasuna won't finish in the top four? I don't think so. I think that the teams above them seem to have a little bit more than Osasuna. But if Osasuna were to finish in a Europa League position, that would be outstanding work. So I think
it's interesting, though, isn't it?
Now, isn't it?
Because they've literally got really 3 points fewer than Atletico and on the same games played, haven't they? You are fourth. So they obviously are contenders, aren't they? Although, let's do Espanyol beating Betis, and then we'll get to Osasuna, because I also want to talk about Elche. So Espanyol are in form, aren't they? They're up to 12th, because they were in the relegation zone, weren't they? Yeah.
Yep. Two wins on the trot, and climbed right up, moved them not well away from trouble, but it's put them right back in the pack. And as you said, so they're above Valencia, who have only played 16 games, though. Valencia play Almeria on the Monday night. So, good work for Espanyol. Grinding out someone else other than Hosselu has to score, and Brathwaite did in this game. And but it's been disappointing. I think one win in the last five for Betis.
You
see there, which is a little bit of an issue for them. So I hope they don't tail off and drift away and fall behind that race for the top four, because as we see it now, the top four is four really good teams, Villarreal putting pressure on. And I want to see Betis still apply themselves and believe they can finish in the top four. And who knows, maybe Osasuna.
Yeah, I mean, we're not even at halfway, are we? So we can't draw too many conclusions.
And teams are going to have good spells, bad spells. But a bad spell that is prolonged can destroy any hopes that you had. Pre-World Cup, the Betis were genuine top four contenders.
Yeah. Elche 1, Osasuna 1. So Osasuna took the lead. Avila with a thumping header, wasn't he? Had to generate a lot of power in it, didn't he? But then Elche came back. Elche, Terry, have claimed a marvellous 2 points from two games.
Last two games. Yeah, unbeaten.
Yes.
Clutching at Shores, unbeaten in the last two. So that'll help them. Carmona is a right back from Sevilla, who seems to be their main attacking threat. He's playing with wing back position. Interesting, he's got two goals for Sevilla, and that was his first goal. So maybe put him up front if he's got an eye for goal. But it was a fine finish. They deserved at least a point. First half Osasuna, second half Elche. Osasuna made changes, looked a little bit jaded in the second half, but they did win their Copa del Rey match after extra time and penalties. Away holders Betis in midweek. So kind of, and then you're looking at them, they're playing Sevilla midweek in the cup. That's, the focus. Squeezing that match in against Elche was probably, they're probably good opponents for Elche. You didn't make the most of playing against a team with their eye on the cup, and did liven up until second half when they were unfortunately behind. Jimmy Avila's goals. We don't talk often enough, not us on the podcast, in general in football, about the skill of heading the ball.
Mm.
We talk about how high people jump and stuff like that. And I played with some players that were really technique-wise, were really good headers of ball, not just power, but their technique. It's a skill. And we don't often talk about that because the ball's played on the floor and no one heads the bloody thing anymore. No one has to. and I got interested in watching the weekend. I'm thinking, I can barely remember, and this is watching all the La Liga games and chunk of Premier League football, I can barely remember a goalkeeper kicking the ball out of his hands anymore. In the whole weekend. It's like an obligation. Now, that can't suit every club and every team, can it, to play the same way as Real Madrid, Barcelona, Man City. But it's a rarity now that someone actually kicks the ball. So therefore, centre forwards don't have to be great in the air anymore. But in this occasion, it was a great cross, Chimi Avila with a really powerful and skillful header. So the heading technique is underrated, to be honest. You don't have to be 6'4" to be a good header of the ball. And Chimi Avila, that was a brilliant header in off the crossbar with real power.
Caditha threatening to sue over the VAR decision on Monday night, aren't they? The offside that was missed for the Elche equaliser.
I was in the studio and we missed it.
It
wasn't it highlighted. It was
3 or 4 seconds back, wasn't it? It was like the play carried on. It's ludicrous to, you can't go suing over. It was basically a mistake, wasn't it? They basically probably forgot to go back enough and check. Because it was Ponce, wasn't it, who scored the goal, who originally laid it off, but he'd come back from an offside position to lay it off.
Then 10 seconds later, ball goes wide, crossed in the box, and he scores. I missed it, but VAR shouldn't miss it. But you can't go suing. That's ridiculous.
People make mistakes.
How much do you want? How much is a mistake on VAR?
But Elche have played 6 Monday nights this season, which is it's too much, isn't it? Too much. They need to. We've said this before, so I'll say it briefly. They need to mix up who plays on a Monday night. Put some of the bigger clubs on a Monday night.
Put some of the bigger games on a Monday night.
Yeah.
It can be good. Monday night football.
Yeah.
We've seen it work in our country. We've seen it work in other countries. It can be a good game.
And you can use it when the European stuff starts up again. It's quite good for the sort of if you've played the Wednesday and you're not playing the following midweek, then have the extra day and play on the Monday. So even six big clubs. What haven't we done? We haven't done Mallorca 1, Celta Vigo 0. Terry, is the 1-0 involving me. I think that's 4 games in a row Mallorca have either won or lost by a goal to nil. A grand total of 31 goals in their 18 games, either for or against this season. They're grinding it out, aren't they?
Yeah, this was a deserved win, I have to be honest. I thought you know what you're going to get when you play Mallorca. You know they're going to sit, they're going to have bodies back behind the ball. They're going to be director, Marici. It's predictable, but it's hard to play against. Teams are finding it hard to play against. And Danny Rodriguez with a fine goal. I thought Mallorca with a spirit and determination and were worthy winners. Celta had a lot more possession. They don't create chances. And when they do, they don't finish them. And it's becoming a real issue. And the fact is, they have a goalkeeper that don't make any saves. And the week before, they one shot on target from Villarreal was a goal. This week, 3 shots on target, 1 goal from Danny Rodriguez. And they've got some issues, Celta. I think they're in the relegation position now. And I worry about Celta. Worry. Seriously. I would be concerned.
Yes.
I'd be concerned if I was a Celta supporter looking at the games and thinking, well, we look like we're playing some good stuff, but we don't finish and we it doesn't take many shots to score against us. So yeah, I think they're in for the long haul, Celta, unless you look at the players they've got up front, you think, well, he should be, Strand Larsen, Paciencia, Aspas clearly is their biggest hope. But somehow they're not taking those chances and they're not creating an abundance of chances. A very possession-based team, but finding it hard to penetrate and be decisive. So I think Celta are in for the long haul this season.
Worst goalkeepers in terms of post-shot XGs for saves made. So the worst is Gavin Bazunu of Southampton, who's a 20-year-old kid who's been, I think, pitched in a bit too much, too deep. And then Marches in after that. Second worst goalkeeper. The only goalkeeper generally is pretty good in La Liga, I would say. The only other one down there is Unai Simon, who is obviously the Spanish national team goalkeeper. There aren't many goals. I did have a look. Why? Because the goals for, if you put all the big 5 European leagues together, Real Madrid are 10th, Barca 14th, Atletico 41st. So, La Liga is struggling in terms of scoring goals. Now, in terms of save percentages, pretty high. So I think it's a combination of defensive play, decent goalkeeping, and average finishing, I think, would be most things are a combination, aren't they?
Yeah. Yeah, and I think as well, it's quite methodical, the Spanish, you know, in terms of technique, passing between the lines, playing out from back to middle to front. So there's a lot of possession stuff. And what you don't see many teams getting the ball forward quickly, getting loads of players in the box that creates that chaos that can, in some games, create three, four, five half chances. I'm specifically talking about Celta Vigo there, where they very methodical with their play, but are reluctant to you know, just get the ball in the final third, to get the ball in behind defenders. It's all in front, and it's quite structured, and that may be a case for the league in general, to be honest.
Yeah. All right, we will leave it there. So there's Copa del Rey midweek. I hope you can watch that wherever you are. It's a bit random.
I know. Yeah, it's some really good games. Barca, Real Sociedad, Osasuna, Sevilla, Valencia Athletic Club, and Real Madrid, Atletico Madrid. I wished it was straightforward to watch.
Yeah, yes. But we'll be back. So, Patreons, please join us. I meant to say this. I'll say it next week as well. Bob Kindred, you sent me a letter. Thank you very much. Very kind of you. Everything you said, but I will respond as well. He's read my book, Terry, and he says it's a good book. And so thank you very much. But he also listens to the podcast as well. So thank you very much for your support. Thank you very much for all of you for listening and for the Patreons as well. So we'll see you with more La Liga next week, but we'll have a chat with the Patreons before then. So we'll see you all soon. Take care. Bye bye.